KGUM, AM and Agatnya, Guam. You got it locked onto the Data Hub with Tyrone Titano, a show about data and statistics only on Guam's hottest talk, News Talk K57.
Welcome to the Data Hub with Tyrone Titano. I am here after a few weeks hiatus due to the coronavirus restrictions, and this is our third show coming back. I should explain, I think, at the outset as to why I'm doing this show. I currently hold a position as Director of the Bureau of Statistics and Plans, and I got this post appointed by Governor Leongaro about a year ago. And there are two things that occurred to me when I got the job, or when I first was getting into it, is that, number one, the broad variety of things that the Bureau of Statistics and Plans is involved in, and involved not only in producing statistics of the Consumer Price Index, but preparing the annual report for compact impact, but also it manages a number of grants, for example, criminal justice grants, the Burns grants and the Coverdell grants that provide technical assistance to law enforcement agencies. Also the Coastal Zone Management Program, which deals with a number of issues, also is the center or the principal land use planning operation within the government of Guam. Another program which has managed for many years is the Coral Reef Initiative, which is funded in part by funding from the Department of Interior, but also from the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration. It is managed right now by the Department of Agriculture, but the grant is currently with the Bureau of Statistics and Plans and has been for many years. And as part of that operation is also what is known as the the services of what is known as a Coral Fellow. This is out of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration under their National Coral Reef Management Fellowship here. The National Coral Reef Management Fellowship is a two-year program established to respond to the needs of the coastal jurisdictions. There are about 36 of them nationwide. It's pretty much anybody who has a coast, and for purposes of the program, that includes the Great Lakes. So states like Indiana have a coast. It's a competitive program. But basically, under the auspices of NOAA, they provided for largely free of charge the service of a trained, usually academic, in order to assist their services in providing the respective coastal jurisdictions in managing their coral reefs. We've been beneficiary of many years from this program here, and two of the graduates of that program have decided to remain with the Bureau and then continue their work on issues dealing with coral reef. They will be appearing tonight. One of them is Whitney Hoot, who is currently the Coral Reef Resiliency Coordinator. And after, at the top of the hour, or after the news, we'll have Mallory Morgan, who is now doing work on sustainable marine tourism. And we'll discuss with Mallory about the issues of sustainable marine tourism, and soon to come on board, which hopefully called in a couple of minutes, will be Whitney Hoot to discuss World Ocean Day. And since she is the Coral Reef Resiliency Coordinator, provide us all with an update on the state of our coral reefs. If anyone wants to join the conversation or have any questions regarding our reefs, you can call in at 477-5757. That's 477-5757. We are now being broadcast live on News Talk K57 and also simulcast on Docomo Channel 2 and GTA Channel 3. So the issues of coral reef has been a serious one, and is also to get a lot of prominence in the last year, particularly with Governor Leongaro's implementation of a new coral reef resiliency strategy, and designed to help boost resiliency in our coral reefs, which has been under a major assault from the impact of climate change, and is expected to have further adverse impacts from climate change between now and the end of the century, which requires us all to devote some attention to preserving our coral reefs, not only to preserve the quality of life, but also it's an important part of Guam's competitive position as a tourist destination in terms of a natural beauty being one of the major draws of tourism. And we'll get into some of these issues regarding how it relates to tourism, particularly at the top of the hour when we join with Mallory Morgan. Also in future shows, by the way, we'll cover a number of things that also handled by the Bureau, including the 2020 Census of Guam. Operations for the 2020 Census of Guam was suspended for about 7 weeks due to the restrictions of the coronavirus, but they're back in operation and retooling in order to continue with the 2020 Census of Guam, but in a different way. And on our show in a couple weeks, we're going to have on Bernie Guinness, who's the Census Office Manager, and our local census advisor from the U.S. Census Bureau, Terry Long. And they'll give us an update as to how the 2020 Census of Guam is going here and the new process that they'll be embarking on. There's also, we'll be discussing some of the criminal justice grants, which the Bureau administers, including a $2.9 million grant, which the Bureau successfully accessed under, applied for and was awarded under the CARES Act that is being used right now for provide masks and sanitary equipment for law enforcement agencies. It will provide personal protective equipment for every single local law enforcement officer. It will also is being used to buy important vehicles, including 4 ambulances. And right now it is being used to also fund a nurse at the Department of Youth Affairs Juvenile Justice Facility in order to assist in screening, they having a large incarcerated facility. But we'll turn to our first subject here, and we'll bring on board Whitney Hoot. Whitney, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, well, thanks for calling us, or calling into the program here. I've been discussing leading up to this, the fact that the Bureau has been greatly benefited from the Coral Reef Fellowship Program, in that it's brought to us talent from two very impressive women, including yourself and Mallory Morgan, who's going to join us after the top of the hour. Just before we get into the subject I want to raise to you, maybe share with the listeners of how you got into the fellowship program and what that process is like, kind of briefly.
Sure. So the fellowship program is a 2-year program that recruits candidates to each of the United States jurisdictions with coral reefs. So that's Guam, CNMI, Hawaii, American Samoa, Puerto Rico, the U.S. Virgin Islands, and Florida. And each fellow comes in with a very specific project. So I was the fellow on Guam from 2016 to 2018, and that's how I came out to Guam. I had just finished my master's degree in the States at the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm.
And your training is a biologist, right?
If I recall correctly. I lived on Pohnpei.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I knew I wanted to come back to the Pacific, and I thought this was an incredible opportunity to come out and to work in coral reef management and be back in these islands that I love. And for my project, I worked on updating Guam's management priorities. So I worked on the development of the Guam Coral Reef Resilience Strategy, and I also coordinated the Coral Reef Response Team and developed response plans, and then did some outreach and education through the Eyes of the Reef Marianas program.
Yes, as you can see, folks, she was a valuable addition to the Bureau's team, and we were very fortunate to have her. Well, Whitney, before, of course, I called you on, asked you to call on the program, not necessarily about the fellowship program, but to help explain World Ocean Day, which is coming up, and for any of you who follow the Bureau's Facebook pages, we're engaging in a countdown to World Ocean Day, which is on June 8th. Perhaps explain to the listeners what World Ocean Day is.
Yeah, absolutely. So World Oceans Day has been running since 1992. It's every year on June 8th, and it's organized by the United Nations. Every year there is a theme. This year the theme is Innovation for Sustainable Oceans. And there's also a movement to call upon global leaders to protect 30% of our oceans by 2030. So it's very action-driven. And here on Guam, we generally celebrate every year by having some big public events. So in the past, they've been hosted at the Adania Shopping Center, at the Micronesia Mall, and also at the Guam Outrigger Resort. Obviously, this year is a little bit different because of COVID. So we've been working to figure out how we can still engage our local community in ocean conservation and just generally celebration of our ocean resources while doing it in a virtual way. So it's a little different this year, but we're still trying to keep people engaged.
Well, World Ocean Day, of course, has a number of partners around the world. A lot of them are aquariums, but also, I believe, Procter & Gamble is one of the partners, and they're, through them, they're tackling the issue, which is of a major threat to our ocean's environment, is the whole issue of plastics. Perhaps you and through something about the deluge of plastic that enters our oceans. And so perhaps you could comment on that problem, because that features highly in a lot of the priorities that World Oceans Day is meant to draw attention to.
Sure, absolutely. So there are some projections that indicate that by the middle of this century, we are going to have more plastic than fish in our oceans. And that's a pretty shocking figure. So what we have to think about any time we purchase or use something is the fact that so much of this plastic ends up in our oceans. And, you know, particularly on Guam, sometimes we're a little limited about our opportunities to recycle. So thinking about, you know, kind of the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle, in that order, we should always try to reduce. If we can't, we reuse, and if not, we recycle whenever possible. Another concern about plastics that directly relates to corals is when you have a lot of plastic, as it spends more time in the ocean and it gets broken down by the salt water and by the UV rays from the sun, it can form these little tiny microplastics, and those can actually be ingested by corals. And you end up with, the science is still kind of developing on what are these long-term implications, but there have been some studies that have shown that corals that get entangled with plastics have more coral disease. And obviously you also have big entanglement issues with turtles and whales and fish. So dealing with the plastic issue and trying to reduce our consumption and recycle whenever possible, I think, is a huge thing. And I know that companies like Procter & Gamble and Johnson & Johnson have responded to the change in the use of microbeads. So you have a lot of, like, products like facial scrubs that have these plastic microbeads in them. And I believe that there is some federal legislation that changed the legality of that, because those go right down the drain and basically straight out into the ocean if they're not filtered out during wastewater treatment. So just really thinking about what we're using, how we can cut back, and how we can do better for our oceans, because everything that we do on land, it can impact our ocean health.
Yes, and plastics is a serious concern, not just for its effect on marine life here. The Zero Waste Working Group that's chaired by First Gentleman Jeff Cook is embarking on an initiative to examine ways to reuse plastics here. I mean, there's a number of options, including use of machines that would take certain types of plastics and melt it down and make new products for it. There's also examining as part of the Green Railways Initiative of using using plastics as part of the granulated plastics as part of the not mixed with the asphalt, but as part of the bedding along with crushed glass, and therefore reuse those reuses here. I read someplace that Dow Chemical has in terms of has a developer process where they use recycled plastics and do mix it with the asphalt, and they have demonstration projects in Vietnam that has proven to be very durable roads, and that's one way of attacking plastics kind of at the source. So as it comes in, there are a number of those issues that for which plastics is a major obstacle here.
And I know that the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance, a local organization, mm-hmm. is currently collecting number 2 and number 5 plastics, and they are using some machinery to break up these plastics and try and make some new products for them, like bowls and earrings and that kind of thing. So we really also have, I think, some really solid and innovative local work going on here to try and figure out how we can reduce the impacts of plastics on our own small island.
And those approaches, which is part of a sort of a green economy and the circular economy approach, makes a lot of sense, particularly for an island such as ours, which imports almost 90% of what we consume from off-island, usually using expensive Jones Act shipping. And so to the extent that we can take waste and convert into resources to fuel a green economy here, we all benefit because we'll keep the dollars here in terms of providing jobs for our people and instead of exporting our resources off-island. But in any event, there is, last year, if I recall, speaking of aquariums, Underwater World took the leadership in organizing a Tumum Bay cleanup last year in order to celebrate World Ocean Day. That's not practical this year for because of the COVID-19 restrictions here, but there have been sort of active involvement. The Bureau was part of that process. Some of our staff participated, and we also helped provide the trash bags and materials for it here. So the profile for World Ocean Day may not be as high this year as it was previously here. It certainly is a long demonstrated interest and in something to pursue. Do you know how many countries around the world are participating in World Ocean Day? Is there any stats on?
I'm not sure offhand how many, but I know that it's a lot and it has built over time. It seems like every year there are more countries that get involved. And I know that in the past, Guam has been featured in kind of these broader, more global World Oceans Day materials because we have done, you know, pretty extensive community outreach and engagement and big events to recognize this day.
Yes, and we'll try and hopefully the COVID-19 restrictions will be a lot less strenuous next year so we can do something out in the ocean. I think that would that would work out. So it's World Oceans Day is just June 8th, right? And so if anyone wants to follow it, we are doing countdowns on the Coral Reef Initiative Facebook page and in other sources to raise awareness of it. Before you go, Whitney, perhaps give the listeners an update as to where we stand with the coral reefs, which has been under major assault from climate change and still expects to be under assault between now and the end of the century. And if you could give the listeners an update as where we stand.
Sure. So right now there is a team of local coral reef managers and researchers who are doing coral reef restoration planning for Guam. And this is really a community-based interagency effort to try and figure out where can we do coral reef restoration and improve the condition of our reefs and basically get the most bang for our buck. Mm-hmm. So that's an ongoing process. I know also that, so Guam, we just recently entered a coral bleaching watch. So generally in the summers, our waters get warmer and that's when we start to experience more thermal stress, so more heating stress on our reefs. When you have high temperatures, you get, the relationship between the coral animal and the symbiotic algae. So these marine plants that live inside of them starts to break down. The corals get stressed. They spit out their algae. And the algae are what give corals a lot of their nutrition and also their bright colors. So that's why bleached corals appear white.
So this is the coral bleaching event that everyone's familiar with. Yeah.
5 to 8 weeks, we may enter a warning. And then in late July, August, so about 9 to 12 weeks, we might experience alert level 1. So at that point, bleaching is likely. So we're really, in the next few weeks, going to see what happens with these projections, and we may really start ramping up our efforts to get our community members engaged in kind of helping us find these impacts. We have the Eyes of the Reef Marianas program, which is eormarianas.org, and that is a program that teaches people how to identify and report reef impacts. And we're not doing in-person trainings right now also, but anyone can go on our website. We have a lot of materials up there, can learn about these impacts and then submit reports.
So for the listeners, cite what the website is.
Yeah, so it's eormarianas.org.
Okay, fantastic. We have a call in from Greg, and we're trying to get him on here on a conference call. Greg, are you there? Greg,
yes,
are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, you have a question for myself or Whitney?
My question is, do we still have a problem with the rain runoff degrading the reef?
Yes, absolutely. So water quality remains a concern on Guam. There's a variety of causes for it. Some are, you know, deforestation, development, off-roading, when people use unsustainable practices for off-roading, you can get a lot of sedimentation on the reefs and nutrients. It's particularly a problem in southern Guam, in part just because of the structure of Guam and the fact that we have about 100 rivers in southern Guam and no rivers in northern Guam. So it is definitely a concern. There are a lot of watershed restoration projects going on to kind of try and reforest these areas. We take a ridge-to-reef approach, so we know that when we increase the amount of vegetation, particularly native vegetation, on the land, that can help reduce the amount of runoff, reduce the amount of sediment that gets to our reefs, and help keep water quality high and prevent corals from being smothered by sediment, or kind of losing their access to the light that they need to continue growing, surviving, and reproducing.
Okay, I understand that. Okay, now, how much of that is storm drains?
How much of it is what?
Storm drains that just dump into the bay inside the reef.
So it's there's kind of separate problems, some from just runoff from, more like forested, wilder lands and from the badlands down south. In Tulum, we definitely have some issues with untreated wastewater coming in right into the bay. It's definitely a concern where we have a lot more development up in northern Guam. And northern Guam is all aquifer-based, so we get in some cases, we have water that comes straight in. But, when you're talking about stormwater, it's in some cases you have less nutrients and more issues with, like, sediment and other chemicals that may be coming in off the road.
Okay, I was just thinking that with storm drains, instead of dumping it, having it go into the bay, if you were to cut holes in the reef and put corrugated pipe through, then that'd be less sediment. But I don't know.
Well, actually,
you guys
caller,
are the
you
experts. I'm just a shipboard engineer kind of guy, and I'm if the storm drains causing sediment to hit the reef, which is causing problems with the reef, you cut a hole, and the reef will regrow around the cutout. But now you don't have all that sediment going into the reef itself.
Well, actually, caller, there because of a new federal regulation we implied on Guam, the whole idea of stormwater being allowed to go into the ocean untreated, basically in this case here, treated to remove sediment. That one is a new federal regulation that's going to ban that sort of process. And so right now, my colleague Vince Arroyo in the Department of Public Works and his team are looking at ways in order to comply with that federal regulation so that you don't have storm water just flowing into the ocean that is not, at least certainly, filtered out for that sort of a sediment as well. But yeah, you raise an interesting idea. Whitney, what do you think of Greg's idea?
I think that there are a lot of innovative solutions to this problem. I would be concerned about cutting holes in the reef so that the sediment just doesn't end up on the reef, because that seems like almost like it could be a Band-Aid approach. So what we should be doing is trying to address the root cause of the issue, which is why is the sediment getting into the storm drains, and what can we do to, install or retrofit green infrastructure, so things from green roofs to rain gardens, to make sure that the sediment isn't getting into our stormwater in the first place. And it's challenging, and those are big infrastructure projects, and I'm not an engineer, but I think here and around the world there are a lot of really bright people who are working on that issue.
Well, I'm thinking that the sediment gets into the stormwater because the stormwater goes into the bay inside the reef, and then it flows out. So, I dive out here. And every time I dive on that zero up at Navy, I see less and less of the zero because the reef is growing out it's dying on the inside because of the sediment from rain runoff, storm drains, whatever is getting in there. And I'm just thinking, if we can cut out the storm drains from going into the bay and going through the reef in a corrugated tubing or pipe, that that's that much less sediment that is going into the inside of the reef.
Yeah, well, I'm not Cole, like you and Whitney, I'm not an expert on the engineering solutions for how to deal with the sediment. My understanding is it's sort of a tiered process, but it's the sort of thing, though, is kind of like complicated to do and is probably going to be kind of expensive as well. But the approach to dealing with the sediment issue is, like Whitney mentioned, is a green infrastructure, forestation to prevent erosion and runoff of sediment. Also, Whitney, you mentioned green roofs. Perhaps for the listeners to maybe elaborate what a green roof is.
Sure. So a green roof is generally when you have a roof rather than covered in shingles or concrete. It's got some kind of, essentially a garden on top of it. And you are then going from, an impervious surface where the water just runs off of it to a surface that can actually collect and use that water. So you can decrease the volume of the water that's making it down onto the street and kind of going through the storm drains. And that is a problem when we have storms and a lot of rain. Anyone who's driven in Tumon or when we've had a very rainy day has seen that we can get flooding issues. So any kind of opportunity to kind of catch and use this water is an opportunity to prevent stormwater from reaching our coral reefs and causing damage.
Yeah. Hey, thanks, guys.
Greg, thank you so much for calling
so
in. And Whitney, thank you so much for providing expert advice. I think also before you go, Whitney, I think you need to describe the major loss to our coral reefs that we've had in the last decade, particularly, four or five major coral bleaching events that has happened, which is almost globally unprecedented in that degree of frequency in that short a period of time. And so maybe sketch out how much have we lost in terms of our coral reefs in the last decade?
Yep. So between 2013 and 2017, we had four coral bleaching events. So that's four events in 5 years. And we lost about a third of our live coral island-wide. And unfortunately, that's really following on the footsteps of decades of kind of slower decline. So we have, in some ways, we're kind of a vision of what may be happening in the future for other reefs. So I think natural resource managers and researchers here were really shocked by the level of decline that they've seen, and we're trying to respond to it as best as we can through restoration, through doing outreach and education to try and increase the likelihood that our reefs are going to remain healthy into the future.
It's because of the urgency of the situation that Whitney has described that Governor Lillian Guerrero last year moved very quickly to implement the new coral reef resiliency strategy, which was developed by a number of public and private sector partners and really driven by Whitney here, who really helped develop the meat of it here and help push it across the finish line. And with an eye to the future, this is something we need to pay attention, not only for a quality of life, for Guam's competitiveness as a tourist destination. People come here for our natural beauty, and that includes the beauty in the water, and coral reefs are part of that. Also, the fisheries, for which coral reefs are the habitat for fisheries, that is an important part of the attraction here. And as we rebuild tourism on island, which has done a major hit, we have to make due care to preserve those features that had a million and a half tourists come to Guam every year before the COVID-19 hit us here. Whitney, in the last minute or so, is there anything you would like to tell or share with the viewers? Though you shared with them a lot of information, which is, by the way, one reason why I do this program is to avail the public of the expertise that is in the Bureau from a very dedicated public servants like Whitney here. Is there anything you would like to mention to them as we go up to the top of the hour in the news?
Sure. I would just like to encourage everyone to check out our Facebook page. So it's Guam Coral Reef Initiative on Facebook. And as Tyrone mentioned, we are doing a countdown to World Oceans Day, which is on June 8th. And we're kind of, you know, since we're not doing a public event this year, one thing that we're doing is we're taking video submissions. So if anyone is interested, you can submit a 5 to 10 second video just showing how you celebrate Guam's oceans. Those are due by June 5th. And we're going to compile these clips and unveil Guam's ocean community video on World Oceans Day on June 8th. And we're also running a competition for NemoNet. And this was a game created by NASA researchers to help scientists better understand coral reef habitats. So over the next few days until June 7th, you can play the game and submit...
Whitney, we're heading to a hard stop at the news tonight. So thank you so much, Whitney, and on to the news.
Okay, thank you, Tyrone.
Okay.
KGUM AM Hagatnya, Guam. News Talk K57.
KGUM AM and Hagatnya, Guam. You got it locked onto the Data Hub with Tyrone Titano, a show about data statistics only on Guam's hottest talk, News Talk K57.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Tyrone Titano, and this is the Data Hub with Tyrone Titano. As the announcer said going in, we'll provide on the show data and statistics, but pretty much at our core, what we're trying to provide is hard information from experts and professionals who know what they're talking about. And they may share opinions, but they'll at least be informed opinions, and then you and the audience can take that information and judge it from there. Featured on tonight are, as I mentioned earlier, are people who came to the Bureau as part of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration's Coral Reef Fellowship Program. I may have misspoke earlier on at the 6:30 top of the show here. The Bureau has actually two available services under two fellowship programs under the National Oceanographic Atmospheric Administration. One is, as I said, is the Coral Reef Fellowship Program, but also there's a Coastal Fellowship Program under the another program of the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration, the Guam Coastal Management Program, for coastal communities, of which there are some 36 across the country, and on a competitive basis, and we're fortunate to get one. We discussed this with Edwin Regis in the last show, and the new Coastal Fellow is expected to come in on island in July. But under the current Coral Reef Fellowship Program, we featured in the first half hour one of the graduates of that program who came to Guam under that program, Whitney Hood. And we're going to talk to Mallory Morgan soon, who also came to Guam under the Coral Reef Fellowship Program. Her fellowship just expired at the end of the year. And we have a new coral fellow who's been selected. Her name is Cora Lynn. She was on island in February and then went back to New York and was going to come back to Guam in the following month, but then the COVID-19 hit, and because of those restrictions, she's been kind of stuck in New York, but as the restrictions lift, we hope to get her out here in the summer. And as I said, joining us is Mallory Morgan. Mallory, are you there?
Hello, half a day.
Half a day. So Mallory, as I said, came to us from the Coral Reef Fellowship Program. She has a bachelor's in environmental studies and a master's degree in marine biodiversity and conservation. And she's currently the Sustainable Marine Tourism Coordinator for the Bureau under the Coral Reef Initiative. And before we get into the meat of your work as not only as a coral fellow but your current work here, perhaps share with the audience as to how you got involved in the Coral Reef Fellowship Program and what brought you to Guam?
Sure. So I was, before coming to Guam, I was working in San Diego in climate change. And before that, I traveled and worked in places outside of the United States, and I was really anxious to get back to working on coral reef issues, and specifically was looking to go international. So I found the NOAA Coral Reef Conservation Fellowship, and I think, you know, each fellowship and each of the jurisdictions has its own subject and topic area, and the tourism impact was something that I've also worked on before. I was a professional scuba instructor for many years, so I had a lot of experience for that. So it was the perfect opportunity to marry coral reef conservation with my experience in the marine tourism sector.
So before we get to your current work on sustainable marine tourism, a lot of what you're doing now was informed with your previous work under the Coral Fellowship, including, I believe it was called Reef Tourism, or Reef Safe Tourism. What was the title of the approach you were taking? The seminars.
Correct.
Yeah, Reef Safe Tourism.
Tourism for
Tassie. There we go, Tourism for Tassie. So perhaps just to educate the audience or bring them along, maybe describe what your work was on the Coral Fellowship and how that leads to your current work as on sustainable marine tourism.
Sure. So basically the way the fellowship works is, you know, there's an impact identified to the coral reefs that needs to be addressed. And for my fellowship, it was tourism and recreational use. Before I came in, there have not been a dedicated person working specifically on reducing impacts to coral reefs from tourism. So I was really, my goal was to affect systematic change. So I really worked closely with the Guam Business Bureau, the Guam Hotel Restaurant Association, and really the tourism managers on island to try to educate about what's going on with our coral reefs and how our tourism industry impacts the coral reefs, as well as easy ways that they can get involved and help us protect our coral reefs. So,
and I'd like to explain to people one of the great horror stories, the common horror stories is of the tourist who goes out and cuts a piece off a coral reef as a souvenir to take back with them. And they don't do this maliciously. They do it because they haven't educated. And when you say some of that, a lot of that is our fault because we have not quite stepped up to provide the education or to provide the awareness for these
exactly.
tourists who care
exactly.
about our environment as much as we do.
My work is really focused to do is to provide that education, because it not only helps the tourists understand how to interact with the reef properly, but it also enhances their experience here while they're on Guam, because they learn about corals and they learn about all that we have to offer. And it's something new to them. So it's not only beneficial for protection and conservation, but can really enhance the experience overall for the tourists.
And so you conducted, I believe, two forums last year with marine tour operators?
I did six marine tour operator workshops. Yes, we had a set of three in 2018. And then we also did one in Japanese and one in Korean specifically to target those demographics as well. We worked closely with a translator and interpreter to provide workshops as well, specifically in those languages. And through the six workshops, we had 34 businesses represented, over 180 participants, 11 government agencies, 6 elected officials, and 9 nonprofit community groups. And we all came together to identify the problem and identify strategies that were most feasible for Guam to reduce impacts of what we were seeing from the tourism sector. And from that, I created a reef-based marine tourism strategy, which outlines all the priority actions that came out of those workshops.
Perhaps you could sketch out what those priorities were when they came out of the workshops and the forums.
Sure. So maybe not surprisingly, one of the biggest one is enforcement. So we have some rules and regulations, but there's no enforcement mechanism because our conservation officers are so strapped for resources, and they have the whole island, land and sea. It wasn't clear who they could call for marine preserve regulations. And then as well, there was no understanding or education of what they should and should not do in the water. So one of the things that came out was the signage project, updating the coastal signage at beach parks, which we're working on this year.
Yeah, there is apparently some money available in a couple federal grants, and so we're examining some very creative signage that would not only provide the information about the marine preserves and safety regulations, but also because they'll be artfully designed to help form yet another tourist attraction, almost a trail around the island here. We're still working on that with the Chesil William Breckner people of the Department of Agriculture, but some of that work has been disrupted because of the COVID-19 restrictions, but we're still pursuing that. In a couple of your forums, though, as you mentioned, we're with tour operators. And in addition to enforcement of the regulations, did they, I believe you came up with a recommendation for certification as well.
Correct. So there is a local law, Public Law 23136, which mandates the accreditation of tour guides on Guam. This is run through the Guam Visitors Bureau. And it requires that any tour guide giving a paying customer a tour of Guam's land has to receive this education and training. But unfortunately, marine tour guides were left out of that process. So we just are hoping to amend that and make sure that our marine tour guides as well get accredited, just so that they're aware of what the rules and regulations are, because it was very clear that there's a general lack of understanding of even what the basic rules are, as well as make sure that they're providing customers and visitors with good information about how they can safely and sustainably interact with the reef.
And certainly one of the surprising outcomes of, or to some people, surprising outcome of your interaction with the marine tour operators is how strongly they supported the idea of the additional certification process. You know, usually businesses are sort of resistant to additional government regulation, but because there are so many unregulated tour operators out there in terms of even business licenses, they rallied for this idea, did they not?
Exactly. So this is a way, you're right, one of the big priority strategies that came out of the workshops was addressing unlicensed and illegal operators, which mm-hmm. is pretty common in marine tourism on Guam. And so this would be a way that we would have an accredited list of businesses that are following the rules, are safe, are sustainable, and a way that, you know, our industry, our hotels, Guam Visitors Bureau, can really direct tourists to these accredited tour companies that we know are educated and trained to safely and sustainably take tourists out onto the reef.
What would you say that experience was like, the interaction with the tour operators about environmental issues there and the sort of feedback you got from them?
I'm sorry?
What would you say that experience was like, these ongoing series of workshops and forums, and the sort of feedback or emotional feedback you got from them about the issue of protecting the reefs and marine sustainability?
Yeah, we started off really broad, open forum style with not just marine tour operators, but other stakeholders as well, other mm-hmm. government agencies. And as the series of workshops went on, we tried to focus down more and more and zero in on what are the strategies that are most needed. What do we have in place now? What is feasible here? You know, what does the community want? What do our stakeholders want? Because, you know, as coral reef managers, it's very easy for us to say this is what these businesses should be doing to protect the reef, but we really wanted to make a process where it was their input guiding what the outcomes would be. And, you know, it was very clear, and I was actually really surprised to see, actually, there's a lot of agreement about what the issues are and what needs to be done. You know, our neighbors over in Palau, and then, you know, of course, we've got the Great Barrier Reef and other neighboring places with really strong marine tourism economies. There have so many rules and regulations and training in place. So we just wanted to start scratching the surface and really find out what is things that we can do in the short and the long term.
What other recommendations came out of these forums that come to mind right now? Beyond us.
So we have improving the enforcement, addressing unlicensed and illegal operators, expanding strategic communications, and increasing capacity and funding for conservation and enforcement. So those are the four priorities.
And the idea of educating the tourists, that would come from the tour guide certification program. That's how we're going to tackle the issue of educating tourists for awareness.
And, you know, they even talked about, you know, videos on the airplanes requiring incoming education, not only on airplanes, even cruise ships.
No, there are not going to be many of those for a while, but yeah. The cruise industry is going to take a longer time to recover than destinations are, I think. So
right. So the signage, for example, is another strategic communication. You know, the businesses really wanted to see the onus of the education more broad-reaching just from the experience themselves. So, for example, when the visitor gets here, when they get to their hotel, when they ride from their hotel to the site, there's many opportunities for this kind of education, not just right before they get in the water, you know, seeing the sign at the site, You know, we talked about signage and information and videos at customs and in the airport.
Mm-hmm. And if done creatively, I think it would enrich the tourist experience, you know, because you're not also educating them about what not to do, but you're sort of educating them what they will find.
Right, exactly. I mean, we're moving towards it's a very digital age, and so there's lots of opportunities for fun videos and really engaging things. And again, you know, the tourists are coming here for the natural beauty, so they're excited to see these things in the water. So, of course, they're going to be interested in a video that shows about the coral reefs and how they can interact. And one thing is, you know, the tourists are going to act and simulate the behavior that they see their guide doing. So it's not just on the visitors, it's also on our local community and our local residents and our local tourism workers to set the example to say that we are also proud of these resources, and we don't touch, we don't take, we don't kick the coral, because we're proud of these and we want to protect the resources for the future. So it's really important that we set that example, and that's why I've been trying to target the industry itself rather than jumping straight into these strategic communications, if you will. I was really trying to get the education out there with the people that are taking the customers in the water.
We're talking with Mallory Morgan, the Sustainable Marine Tourism Coordinator for the Coral Reef Initiative Program under the Bureau of Statistics and Plans. We're broadcasting live on News Talk K57 and simulcast on Docomo Channel 2 and GTA Channel 3. If anyone out there wants to join the conversation to discuss the issue of sustainable tourism or Guam's coral reefs, our number is 477-5757. That is 477-5757. And so you're more than happy to join in the conversation. Mallory, speaking of ways to educate people about the coral reefs here, and Whitney sort of touched on it in the previous block, and unfortunately ran out of time, ran into the news. But one project that has been working on through a grant from the Coral Reef Initiative with Dr. Romina King at the University of Guam is partnering with NASA for their development of this video game called NemoNet. And this is, for those who recall, last year there was some coverage of a NASA team out here with a drone that did flew over PD Bay, you know, and they have this special technology that allows them to photograph the ocean above in the bay, and then remove through computer process the glare and other things, and see in there to where the coral reefs and other features of the submerged lands are, and they've done it also in Tumon Bay in a previous year. They've incorporated all that and footage they have from coral reefs in, I believe, American Samoa and in the Caribbean into this video game. And so Guam's featured in this video game, which NASA released, I believe, a few weeks ago. And we're also working with through GVB and seeing if NASA see the possibility of getting a version of that game that's translated to like Japanese or Korean, and so provide a tourism product, you know, that, you know, not only helps the our tourist industry, but is also a means of educating particularly young people and young tourists about Guam's reefs by using actual footage. It's kind of an interesting game. They sort of you can go up all steps and as you are with a normal video game. But those are the sort of things that I are being looked at in order to expand education. So Mallory, so much for your previous work on the Coral Fellow. What is ahead of you now as the Sustainability Marine Tourism Coordinator?
So, you know, as I mentioned, I'm working with Guam Visitors Bureau to create a marine tour operator course that would supplement their existing tour guide course. We're also bringing Green Fins to Guam, which is a program through the United Nations Environment Program, and it's implemented by the Reef World Foundation. And Green Fins is a voluntary green certification for businesses, mainly diving and snorkeling operators.
What are they certified in? So they certified them that they will
become Green Fin certified, which means they're practicing environmental strategies in their businesses to reduce impacts to the environment.
Okay, I see. So,
so it's a green business label, and it's a way for you know, divers and visitors who want to choose an operator that is sustainable. They can go to a Green Fin
business on
and use that certification
to worldwide program,
and use that certification to also to promote their business as well, that they are environmentally friendly operation.
Right.
If this comes from the who produces this program, the UN or?
Yeah, so Greenfins is a program through the United Nations Environment Program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's worldwide, and it's in over 15 countries by now, all the way to the Caribbean and Asia, all over Asia. And Guam is going to be the first U.S. territory to become a Greenfins member, so it's really exciting. And this was another program that came out of the workshops that some operators were really interested in, because, you know, it's voluntary and it really helps their business, because the Greenfins program promotes those businesses at a global platform on, you know, the diving and scuba trade show conventions. And it's a way, again, kind of like what I was saying with the Marine Tour Operator course, to really have a vetted list of operators that we know are operating in a sustainable way.
So your basic task for the year is to implement some of the findings that came out of the numerous forums and workshop that you did as a Coral Fellow, basically.
And I also have another project that I'm about to launch and start working on. It will be the Guam Coral Bleaching Alert Network. So I know you talked with Brittany earlier about coral bleaching, and Coral Bleaching Alert Network is similar to the programs they have in Florida and Australia, and basically it's a system to alert the public and marine tour operators and any other visitors that go into Guam's waters when the corals are under severe thermal stress. So it's a way to, one, alert the public that the corals are at risk of bleaching, and to please keep an eye out so that if they do see bleaching, they can report it to us. And also to encourage recreational activity away from reefs when they are bleaching as well. And then third, just a way to generally educate the public about what's going on with coral bleaching, since it is such an issue here on Guam. So that uses NOAA's Coral Reef Bleach Watch, which is the surface temperatures and satellite data. So it's really just a thermal stress alert. It's not real time, but again, it's a way that we can really activate the local community on when the oceans are warming and when the corals are more at risk for bleaching and more vulnerable to impacts from recreational use.
Perhaps you could explain the listenership. You talk about it when this the alert is made about a coral bleaching event, about sort of curbing recreational activities near the reefs. Why is that a good thing to do?
So, you know, if a diver gets too close to the reef, they can kick up sand onto the reef, and they can kick the reef as well, which tears the coral, the membrane on the coral. So it's a way to, if the corals are about to bleach or dealing with high thermal stress, they're using a lot of energy. So any additional physical stretch that a diver or a snorkeler or even somebody just walking in the water, that could cause more mortality because they're already stressed from the thermal stresses.
And so, in other words, we're kicking up more sediment and other things that would tear off from the reefs as well. So basically along those lines.
Right, right. I mean, bleaching is a stress response. So it's basically, you know, if a coral is already sick or it's about to get sick, and then you add somebody kicking it on top of it, it's going to be worse for it.
You know, one of the things I've been meaning to do is to post on the Bureau's various social media pages is this a satellite map for which Mallory's referred to and Whitney's referred to, and I've seen, and it's kind of like this it basically tracks a warming water as it sweeps through the oceans of the world, and it's like this big red wave heading towards you. And I think it's very striking reminder as to what kind of assault a lot of the coral reef environments are from climate change. It's I think we sidestep a major event. I think it was last summer or early this year, because there were a number of storms, and so that sort of disrupted the wave of warming water heading towards us. And it's just a very striking thing, and I think it sort of reminds people to do it. By the way, right. Whitney, I'm sorry, it was Whitney and along with Mallory, one of the contributors to the countdown for World Oceans Day. So she's one of the authors in the post being put on the Coral Reef social media page. So,
please send your videos for creating a community World Oceans Day Guam video. So, we're accepting 5 to 10 second clips from the community of them showing how they enjoy or protect Guam's oceans, and we'll unveil that on World Oceans Day, June.
Yeah, and the beaches have been open just in time for this. That occurred to me, for them to actually go out and and take some videos actually in the water. So the universe is aligned for you for World Oceans Day, I think, this month, Mallory.
Every day is World Oceans Day.
That's it. There we go. Every day is World Oceans Day, because the ocean is still out there, and it's still churning and still moving and still under a number of challenges. What else do you think you have in mind for, or what else is ahead of you in your current work as the?
I mentioned a lot of work with marine tour operators. I also have a program for the hotels. So over the fellowship, I created a program called Hotels for Guam, or Friends of Reefs Guam, and I'm expanding that this year. With COVID responses, a lot that our hotels are dealing with. So we're currently re-envisioning what this program will look like. But Hotels for Guam is a train-the-trainer program, and about 5 or 6 staff from a hotel will have a Hotels for Guam team, and we train that team on a module of coral reef education, both including the basic biology so they understand how corals work, and then how people from their hotels affect that, as well as how the hotel itself may affect the health of the coral. And the idea is that these teams from each of the hotels then go and teach their own staff at different staff meetings or department meetings or new employee onboarding. So it's really trying to groom a team and a set of environmental champions from the hotels for coral reefs. So we trained 6 hotels in 2018, and I'm expanding that as well this year.
Yeah, and it may sound a little off-key to some of the listeners that we're moving on with this program, even though a good many of the hotels are closed, considering the collapse of the tourist market. But one of the challenges before us as we rebuild the tourism industry here is also to address the issue of what kind of tourism industry we want. Although it's unfortunate that we have this a lull in activity here, but it also presents as an opportunity to reshape our tourist industry in a manner that's not only stronger and more competitive, but is also sustainable for the future here. This is in Vegas. People aren't coming here for the casinos. They're coming here for the natural beauty. And in fact, if we want to ensure a strong tourism economy here that will last beyond the next couple of years, then we need to to give due attention to the environmental assets, which are in fact economic assets of this community, which features so much into our competitive as a tourism destination. Now, even beyond that, there's the larger challenge of re-envisioning or doing an assessment about Guam's competitive vision. How are we going to fit into the new tourist markets here? Because based on all the literature I've read in here, the tourist market we're going to deal with is going to be the psychology of tourism is going to be radically different than what came from before. And this recovery is going to have to be give some more serious thought to that new psychology here. This is not like, for example, in previous blows to the tourism economy, like, for example, 9/11, when afterwards everyone was afraid to travel. And basically the idea was you wait for people to calm down and you come back and it's basically business as usual. You mark the island the same way and et cetera here. That's going to be substantially different as the world opens up again, or tourist markets open again in COVID-19. And this is being recognized worldwide. Destinations like Venice of all places, is doing a serious effort to reimagine Venice. Venice, which has been, almost an icon as a tourist destination for decades, if not centuries, They are examining how to re-envision and reimagine Venice, particularly as a sustainable industry. And because of the popularity of Venice, a lot of the major problems Venice had to deal with here is cruise ships and a lot of tourist shops are popping up here that was detracting from Venice's natural beauty and was not environmentally friendly and harmful to not only major structures in Venice, but the stability of the community itself. And they're doing examining a number of things, such as reinvigorating the small manufacturing center in the center of Venice. And for those of you who have not been there or seen what Venice is in up to now, it was a hodgepodge of major tourist traps and little shops that all along the way they're selling all these trinkets that, for example, were cheap imitations of actual products of Venice, like Murano glass, and they wanted to sort of reinvigorate that to enhance the not only the quality of life for people who live in Venice, but also to breathe new life into Venice's image as a tourist destination. And so, go ahead, Meryl, you're saying something?
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, I'll give you an example of that locally on Guam, this opportunity that we have. So, you know, a lot of people don't even realize that Timon Bay is a marine preserve. And, you know, we have 14 hotels along Timon Bay Marine Preserve, but you'd never know that it was a marine preserve unless you happen to see a sign that's now peeling and covered in vegetation. So it's an opportunity for those hotels to advertise and say, hey, look, we're on a marine preserve. Come see our free open-air aquarium right in front of our hotel. And by telling the tourists that this is a marine preserve, it benefits and attracts for their business. But it also makes the tourist aware that this is a marine preserve, so you cannot take shells and balassi and things out of the preserve. So it's a win-win situation.
Yeah, but beyond the protection of the environmental resources, one of the things I know people involved in rebuilding the Guam's tourism economy is examining probably the value in pursuing certain niches of the tourism trade that may not have gotten enough attention before. For example, environmental tourism, which involves not just the sun, sand, sea thing that is typical for destinations like Guam before, but an experience that involves them immersing them, learning about the environment and introducing them to the environment, and not just like parking in a hotel on a beach, but actually given the opportunity to engage in marine life here, or even projects like forestry are planning in order to deal with erosion control to protect those reefs. There is always been a niche like that internationally here. It's not been a major focus on for Guam, but as tourist destinations around the world recover, they all have to examine new ways of attracting tourists here, and because they'll all be hungry for tourists. And some of this speaks to not only things that are suited also for as an island economy, but also there'll be a lot of pressure to actually come up with new and different ways to bring back the tourists, which are such a mainstay and a major pillar of our economy. And that involves exploring things like environmental tourism, which is why Mallory's focus or job as a sustainable marine tourism coordinator is so important. And so programs like that she's talked about in dealings with the hotels, even though the hotels aren't really open now here, they're important in order to provide foundations for the future. And that's what this is all about. It's about building for the future and preserving the future here. So this, and one of the things the Bureau of Statistics is supposed to do is supposed to look ahead and plan ahead. And that's kind of what Mallory's doing. Is there anything else you want to mention about your some of the other programs you're doing or you're going to embark on?
You know, I'm really excited. I think that, you know, although this is an extremely challenging time for tourism on Guam, it's, like you just mentioned, it's a really great opportunity for us to think about the tourism economy as it is and what opportunities we have. And Guam has a really great competitive edge in that we have a lot of great natural resources and opportunities for tourists to come and be outside and be in salt water and the sun. You know, we've got a great
edge on that in the market right
and
now.
And there are opportunities. For example, there is at least one hotel that is closing down for refurbishment. And so they're in the process of reimagining themselves as a hotel facility here and refurbishing for the coming rebound in the tourism economy. So even with the industry, they recognize now's the time to invest or to reposition ourselves for the new tourist market to come here. And one of the things that Mallory and a number of agencies throughout the government of Guam are working on is to take a look at what new ways of doing these things, see what the market looks like as we emerge and try to do in there. But besides focusing on the specific things you're working on, Mallory, I was wondering if maybe share with the listeners, somebody who's now worked on the whole issue of sustainable tourism for Guam for now literally years, what's your perspective about the prospect for sustainable tourism or the impetus for it, or the other, what's out there, factors are that are affecting it in general?
What is needed?
Well, no, what just beyond, I focus you on like individual specific things, just to give the listeners a sense of the actual practical things you're working on. But as we get near, well, we still have a ways to go in the program, but I thought to share with them your perspective as someone who's working for years and your own outlook on sustainable tourism and basically your own philosophical outlook on this is kind of what I'm sort of enticing. I didn't mean to put you on the spot. There's no test here, but you know, it's I usually find the people that have been working on this one in the trenches for years, they have a perspective which is valuable, and that not everyone it immediately occurs to everyone because they haven't actually been that immersed in it as you have. So I just this is your moment to share your perspective for the people of Guam.
Okay, well, you know, I think what I would like to see is, I think it really all comes down to how we think about what we're asking for. You know, what is sustainable tourism? What does sustainable marine tourism look like? You know, it's how you frame that thinking. So, like I mentioned before, I think really I'd like to see us instilling a sense of pride and respect and from our local community about what we have and about our resources, and sharing that and being a good example to others of how we treat our island and what we expect of those that come and visit our island. Again, it's not just for conservation and protection, but it's a great business opportunity for hotels or business owners or tourism managers to think about, this is one of our greatest assets, is our oceans and our coral reefs, and we need that to sustain in the long term. And while, you know, coral managers on Guam are well aware that there's a lot of other issues facing our reefs, and tourism and recreational use is not the number one issue facing Guam's reefs specifically, it is the thing that we probably can most easily affect change in and quickly. It's a low-cost issue to address. You know, it's really education, asking people not to step on and kick and hold on to the coral. It's really trying to change the mindset and the thinking about our corals, our animals, they're alive, you know, they're not rocks out in the water. So how do we want to show people how we treat the coral reefs for the future? And we want to have this product over the long term. So it's really important now that we're reimagining and looking at the tourism industry at a new intersection here. And really, like you said, we're going to be building it from the ground up again. What do we want that to look like? And I think really keeping in mind that our oceans and our coral reefs are one of Guam's greatest assets in the tourism industry. It's something that we really have a great opportunity and need to steward and take care of. And it's a conversation that, you know, we've just been getting started over the last couple of years. We've got a long way to go, but it really takes everybody's effort. I like to think of, you know, when a visitor comes, we want them to understand, and what we're trying to teach them has to happen at multiple points in the experience. So once they are on the plane, when they arrive, when they get to the hotel, when they're out and about, when they go rent their car, when they go to the restaurant, there's so many opportunities for people to get involved in this issue, and to get involved with sharing just a little bit of information here and there about why we don't touch the coral, why we don't take things out of the water, that can enhance the experience. And the more they see it and the more people get involved and talk about it, I think it really builds that ethic on Guam. Whereas currently, a lot of times people say, oh, but, you know, I don't take people in the water, so what do I have to do with this? But you're on Guam and you have visitors and customers in your business, so you absolutely have an opportunity to help us protect the reason that tourists are coming to Guam. So I guess it's just working together and reimagining and reinstating a sense of ethic and pride from our local community and from our local business owners on these resources.
And you've quite rightly touched on it, that not only the aspect of it being a responsibility, but also an opportunity. There is a niche in tourism of environmental tourism, but mm-hmm. also as you developed this sense of ownership by the community into a coral reef, and I think it does exist there. This will create its own sort of social environment that will make Guam much more a more inviting place. As we've often said, one of the reasons for Guam's competitiveness as a tourist destination has been the warmth of the people who come here, are very welcoming of visitors. And I think as we invest in or spend the time to examine these issues and broaden education, I mean, as some of the work you're doing here is important to building up education, particularly among tour operators, but also on the public. The Bureau has done a number of things to expand public education about the reefs. A good part of it is folded into the Governor's new coral reef resiliency strategy and things we do on social media. Earlier this year, we had a program which the Bureau has done for the last 15 years, as you're familiar with, Mallory, called Guardians of the Reef, where mm-hmm. high school students are assembled and they're trained to educate third graders about the reefs. And I had a few of them on the show, and some of them were people who are doing this program for the second time. Some of them was one of those third graders in the years past who actually saw some of these presentations. And so efforts like that that are not necessarily glossy TV ads, but sort of grassroots efforts that particularly gets involved in our youth, that's the way to build up that stock of ownership and awareness and understanding of the reefs as it goes forward here.
Actually, in the last, just in February, I started working closely, and I went and did a few presentations with the Guam Community College Tourism Management School. And so I was teaching the tourism professors there. Mm-hmm. Again, this train-the-trainer mm-hmm. concept. General, very basic, easy to understand coral reef education, and then reef-based strategies that they could teach their students. So really, again, trying to marry tourism with coral reef or marine conservation generally. And a lot of this can be applied, not just to coral reefs, but as you mentioned, to the land as well, and watershed restoration mm-hmm. and forestry. There's a lot of opportunities, and that's another part of my function, my role that I continued on with the Bureau, is to function as kind of the middleman between conservation and natural resource agencies and tourism. We do have a lot of opportunities. So we've got a new coral fellow coming in who's going to be studying seagrasses and mangroves. So, for example, is there a potential for
Before we leave that subject, maybe explain the listenership about mangroves and why that's important, because to the environment, particularly the coral reefs.
Sure. So mangroves provide many benefits. One, they help with coastal erosion. They're really popular nursery habitats for baby fish. So that's where a lot of fish go and live early on before going out to the reef. They help with water quality. They are really a great buffer between the ocean and the land. So when you have runoff from rain, sedimentation, those mangroves really act as a great filtration. They often sequester a lot of carbon, so they're really important for climate change. Mm. Same thing with seagrass. So seagrass beds typically are found nearby mangroves as well. They work well together and protect those juvenile species that then go out and live on the reef.
And Cora will be examining that as part of her research as a new Coral Fellow. She's been doing some of the work for us remotely from New York. As a matter of fact, I believe she's a contributor to the countdown for World Oceans Day and that effort as well. But we hopefully get her here soon. Taking care of the mangroves be an interesting environmental experience for tourists just to learn something new and see it in its natural habitat? All these wealth of possibilities here that with some imagination and some degree of analysis here that may actually prove to be something really really significant in terms as we rebuild Guam's tourist industry and look for new ways to do it here. So sustainable, and by the way, before we leave, as I've talked about the fine team under the Coral Reef Initiative on the Bureau, and that there is Mallory and Whitney Hoot and Carlin, since you mentioned about forestries, I would be remiss in not mentioning Patrick Keeler, the Coral Reef Watershed Coordinator, who is the one who focuses, who devotes a lot of his time for these sort of tree plantings and other terrestrial things that need to be done to help protect the reefs, particularly from erosion. He's stationed at the Department of Agriculture, and matter of fact, I'm not sure if it's planting. Is it planting season already for them? Because that's when usually he devotes a lot of his time over at agriculture. And he's another valuable member of the coral reef team.
Yep, and they're also working on bamboo removal projects as well.
Yes, yes. This is done in Mauritso, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yes, and so that one is that's important also for helping to deal with flooding issues in that area as well, particularly in the Barcenas
right.
area. The Bureau, by the way, is involved in working with the Army Corps of Engineers for measures to deal with flooding problems in a number of villages, not just Mauritso, but also Umatic and Santa Rita and others as well. And we're in the process of developing a grant proposal to take the first steps in at least doing the architecture and engineering design for solutions for flooding in the Barcenas area. This is a matter of very active interest by the administration, and particularly in storms, a lot of focus is made to keep those areas clear so the flooding does not get out of hand during major typhoons. But it just shows to show how so much of the stuff is sort of intertwined. And the more we come up with a sustainable operation that deals with flooding in Mauritso, the more you enhance not only the quality of life for people who live there, but also deal with sort of environmental issues here that are necessary to protect the reefs and actually preserve the island's natural beauty. Mallory, is there anything else you want to add to the listener? I've made you talk for now 43 minutes, sort of nonstop. Is there anything as we get to the top of the order, anything you want to share with the audience as we go to the glide path for the end of this evening's edition of the Data Hub?
I hate to be that person, but I really would just encourage people to follow us on Facebook at Guam Coral Reef Initiative, because we share all sorts of events or news updates or local happenings related to anything from coral reefs to our partners in the watershed and, you know, our incoming coral fellow with mangroves and seagrasses. There's all sorts of stuff. If you're interested to find out more, you can find that on our Facebook page. And also, I just give a shout-out to the local community. I know we have a lot of local divers and snorkelers and people that live here year-round, not just the tourists. And, I just want to encourage a local ethic and sense of pride for our resources that, you know, every drop in the bucket counts. So just because if you think you take one thing and this person takes one thing, it's not a big deal, but it's really creating that community-wide ethic and sense of pride on our reach that keep wildlife wild and just look but don't touch.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Mary, for taking time out of your busy schedule to call in for this one. I'm sure it's provided the listeners a lot of valuable information. By the way, we will if anyone wants to catch up with the program, we'll be posting it soon on the Bureau's social media pages for the Coral Reef Initiative and the Guam Coastal Zone Management Program, and also for the Bureau of Statistics and Plan's own Facebook page. And so there will be a link to the podcast, which is the recording of this program. And feel free to go on the tap in the link and maybe share with friends. Anyone interested in the issue of Guam's coral reef for sustainable tourism, or the upcoming World Oceans Day. So thank you again, Mallory, for joining us. Okay, have a nice evening, okay?
Thank you.
And we're getting near the end of the program here. I just want to mention in upcoming programs, we'll have I'll be focusing on the 2020 Census of Guam. We'll have Bernie Guinness, the Census Office Manager, and Terry Long, the local U.S. Census Advisor. That'll be on our program, I believe it's June 16th. Our next program, which is on next Tuesday on June 8th, we're going to focus on with the Bureau's work with criminal justice agencies, such as the Department of Youth Affairs and Department of Corrections and GPD, and public safety agencies such as the Guam Fire Department. The Bureau actually, on a normal basis, is the state agency that administers two key federal criminal justice grants. One is under known as the Burns Grant, the other is the Coverdale Grants. And what happens is that it provides resources to help deal with current critical issues, including implementation of the Prison Rape Elimination Act, also to promote the creation of a central database for criminal data that will service all the law enforcement agencies as well as the judicial branch as well. We also, though, this year, as a consequence of CARES Act funding, was sought and applied for and was awarded a $2.9 million grant that has been used to provide valuable equipment for the police department and the fire department, and will provide. It's expected to be arrived sometime next week. PPE equipment, personal protective equipment, for every single local law enforcement officer, and as well as providing sanitation supplies and face masks and other things, and helping to deal with the help our first responders deal with the challenges of the COVID-19. So with that, I'm Tyrone Titano. This has been the Data Hub with Tyrone Titano, you being broadcast on News Talk K57 and simulcast on Docomo Channel 2 and GTA Channel 3. We're here every Tuesday from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Here on News Talk K57. Thank you so much for joining us. As I mentioned earlier, a podcast of this program will be posted on the not only on K57.com, but you can find it on the Bureau's social media pages. Not only the Bureau of Statistics and Plans, but the Coral Reef Initiative and the Guam Coastal Zone Management Program. Thank you all for joining in and listening, and I'll see you next week for the Data Hub with Tyrone Titano. Good evening. Stay safe.